Blog Talk Radio.
Time it is. This is the Ankeny Experience on a Tuesday night, March 14, 2017, 8 o'clock on the East Coast. Welcome to the show. I am still feeling the effects of this daylight savings time stuff. And we had some unusual weather this weekend, and there's a lot of snow going on in the north. So if you're listening to the show up north, hope you guys get through it okay. I'm not a snow fan. We had a slight blizzard here on Sunday with a trace of snow. I was able to make a snowman out of two pieces of snow. The thing was so small you have to see it in a microscope. But we managed to survive it. But snow ain't no joke. And I thought, matter of fact, I think next Monday is the first day of spring, but you can't tell because it's been pretty chilly. But anyway, please sit back and listen to the show while you're drinking a big cup of hot cocoa or coffee. Tonight we're going to be talking about a very interesting psychological phenomenon. I don't have all the answers tonight. I just want to talk about it, see if you have anything to say about it. Got some interesting clips to play. If you want to call in, phone number 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. Chat room is open. Questions or comments, I'll save that for later. But tonight we're going to be talking about cognitive dissonance. And that is a very interesting subject. Like I said, I don't have all the answers. I was planning on talking about this earlier in the year, but just got around to doing it now. So this is probably something I'm probably going to do maybe a later show on, just to cover some of the things that I didn't cover tonight. Hopefully I can be able to get through everything. But this is a very interesting show to talk about, and what this has to do with Black history, since this is mostly what I talk about on this show. But it does kind of relate. And we're going to be talking about some of the current things going on in the country as it relates to this phenomenon. And once you hear what it's about, you may have an idea what it's about, you may not, but hopefully tonight after we get through the show, you may have a little bit more knowledge about what it is about. Like I say, this is psychology. I've taken psychology in college, but that was a long time ago. So I'm going to probably do like a lot of you, just learn a little bit more. I've got some reading I want to read in a few. Got some interesting clips. So like I said, if you want to join the show, call in 563-999-3682, 563-999-3682. Well, if you can't call in, just sit back and listen to the show. Coming to you live from the capital city of North Kakilaki. And also the chat room is open for your questions or comments. I will save that toward the end of the show. So feel free to drop in or however you want to do. It's all good in the neighborhood, so do what you got to do. Like I said, we're going to talk about this in a second. So if you're familiar with the show, you know how we do. I'm going to play out, get our commercial out of the way. Our commercial, come back, do my weekly Trump diss, because if you really been listening to the show, you know that I'm not a fan of this current president. And a matter of fact, he has a little bit to do with what we're talking about tonight. We're going to get into that in just a second. So hopefully tonight is going to be a very, very, very interesting show for you tonight. So we're going to play our commercial break out of the way, and we'll be back with the rest of the show. Sit tight, don't move. Be right back. In February of 1926, historian Carter G. Woodson launched Negro History Week, which later became Black History Month. On the Aunt Canary Experience, we celebrate Black History 12 months a year. Hi, I'm Aunt Canary, host of the Aunt Canary Experience, the show for all things about our history, not history. On the Experience, we also talk about current events that affect the Black community and the country. So join me every Tuesday night from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. to get your weekly Black History lesson. You can listen live or call me at 563-999-3682. I talk about topics that schools are afraid to tell our children about.
Tuesday night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Please check out the Ankeny Air Experience.
All right, we're back. Let me get that call-in number again in case you missed it, 563-999-3682. 563-999-3682. This is our new call-in number. I changed a couple of weeks ago. I was used to the old number because that's the number we had been using ever since the show has been on. So you might need to write this down, save it just in case. 563-999-3682. Okay. Now, before we get into the subject, our weekly Trump diss is, as you know, this person, he's been all in the news, as you well know. He's accused of former president of wiretapping Trump Tower. He's got people in his cabinet saying that microwaves can spy on you. The numbers came out for this, I'm going to call it Trump Care, that it basically says that people are going to be kicked off of their insurance coverage. I mean, millions of people are not going to have insurance. And as you pretty well guess, that side doesn't like it. They don't think the numbers are, they don't agree with the numbers. What else? Anything you can think of has been, I mean, this is a hot mess. This is a very, very hot mess. And like I said, I'm going to keep bringing stuff up as long as this clown is in office. And, you know, some people may not like it. Some people do. Some people don't. Well, what can I tell you? It's my job. So this week, what I like to do, too, when I do some of these are serious. Some of these are news clips. Some of these I like to use a little humor in them. The one clip that I wanted to play tonight, for some reason I couldn't get it. If I can get it next week, I'll play it. This is just a short clip. Matter of fact, this clip is from Saturday Night Live, and I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in years. Matter of fact, I haven't watched Saturday Night Live since Eddie Murphy left. But I kind of show you, you know, how I ain't gonna say how old I am, but how experienced I am. But since Trump has been in office, I mean, Saturday Night Live has been in fuego, which is Spanish for on fire. And this guy just gives them, stuff, material every week. And this clip, they talk a little bit about this Trump Care thing. This is their weekend update, and this is like a 5-minute clip. But it's funny. Like I said, I don't want to be too serious sometimes, because I usually save the seriousness for the topic. You know, I like to use a little bit of humor every now and again because, you know, we are going through some very, very serious times now. So every now and again, you got to kind of sit back and laugh at things. So here's the clip from Saturday Night Live.
It's Weekend Update with Colin Jost and Michael Chang.
Welcome to Weekend Update. I'm Colin Jost.
I'm Michael Che. Well, this week, Republicans made their best effort to unite the country by presenting a new health care plan that everybody could hate together. Democrats are upset because a lot of poor people could lose their coverage. Conservatives are upset because it doesn't repeal Obamacare enough. And I'm upset because it still doesn't cover medicinal cocaine. And I got a screenplay to finish. I spent the money. The White House is officially calling the bill the American Health Care Act. And not as many people in the media have been calling it Trump Care, or as they probably should be calling it, Don't Care. Are you old and poor and losing your coverage? Don't care. How bad does something have to be for Trump not to want to put his name on it? This guy once put his name on a Ponzi scheme. But even for this, he's like, I don't want to take all the credit. I'd be like if Kanye's next album was called, But Enough About Me.
It was estimated that the Republicans' health care plan gives a $400 billion tax break to the rich, while the poor will receive a box of generic Band-Aids and a travel-sized bottle of Airborne. The Republican plan to replace Obamacare would also cut funding to Planned Parenthood, so you might not get to keep your health care, but you'll have to keep something else. Speaker of the House Paul Ryan gave Congress a PowerPoint presentation about the health care bill, because nothing says trust me about the future like PowerPoint. Unfortunately, he clicked one slide too far and it got into workout tips.
Representative Jason Chaffetz defended the cost of the new health care bill, saying that if poor people want insurance, they'll have to choose between health care and that new iPhone, which is ridiculous. How are you supposed to even know when you need a doctor if you don't have an iPhone to FaceTime your junk to Colin and ask, hey, man, you ever get this before?
They gave you a fake number. President Trump introduced his revised travel ban this week, though it's probably not great that it's just a bunch of brown color swatches. The new travel ban will go into effect on March 16th, and then on March 17th, we showcase the type of upstanding immigrants this country wants.
WikiLeaks released documents saying the CIA can hack into personal devices and spy on people. Now, this is why I'm glad I have black grandparents. They told me the CIA was recording everything years ago. One year, I got my grandfather a universal remote, and he smashed it with his dress shoe and said, boy, don't you know that's how they got Dr. King?
President Trump this week also surprised a group of children on a tour of the White House. Let's take a look at that. Out like a monster on Scooby-Doo. Is he trying to scare those kids away from a treasure? Speaking of Scooby-Doo, I think the eyes are moving in that painting behind him. But real quick, can we just turn up the audio and hear the kids' reaction to Trump? Can we hear that? Nothing says my presidency is going well like the screams of children. I thought the weirdest part was right at the end when Trump said, now, which one of you kids wants to be the new U.S. attorney in New York?
Okay. That was this week's Trump Diss. All right, so now we're about to get into the topic tonight of what is cognitive dissonance. What is it? And this is something that's very interesting. You may have to do a little bit more research on this whenever you get the time. It is kind of, I'm not going to say it is kind of complicated, but it is something that I want to say this. It's interesting to read about, and I think we all have gone through this at least one time in our lives. And tonight we're going to talk about this, and we're going to apply it to racism in this country, because there is a lot of it going on right now, and you know, not going to sleep on it. We're going to talk about it. So call in 563-999-3682. Let's get into this. What is cognitive dissonance in psychology? Cognitive dissonance is the mental stress or discomfort experienced by an individual who holds two or more contradictory beliefs, ideas, or values at the same time, forms an action that is contradictory to their beliefs, ideas, or values, or is confronted by new information that conflicts with existing beliefs, ideas, or values. Leon Festinger, which we're going to hear about in some of the clips tonight, his theory on cognitive dissonance focuses on how humans strive for internal consistency. An individual who experiences inconsistency tends to become psychologically uncomfortable and is motivated to try to reduce this dissonance, as well as actively avoid situations and information likely to increase it. A lot of the examples used in some of the night's clips are talking about how people who smoke tend to kind of try to deal with this situation by using three different techniques that I'm going to talk about in just a second in order to deal with this this thought process. And they are, let's talk about this for just a second. Individuals can adjust their attitudes or actions in various ways. Adjustments result in one of three relationships between two cognitions or between a cognition and a behavior. Constant relationship. Two cognitions, actions that are consistent with one another. For example, not wanting to get intoxicated while out, then ordering water instead of alcohol. A relevant relationship. Two cognitions, actions that are unrelated to one another. For example, not wanting to get intoxicated while out, then tying your shoes. And dissident relationship. Two cognitions, actions that are inconsistent with one another. For example, not wanting to get intoxicated while out, then consuming a large quantity of alcohol. Magnitude of dissonance. The amount of dissonance produced by two conflicting cognitions or actions, as well as the subsequent psychological distress, depends on two factors. The first one is the importance of cognitions. The more the elements are personally valued, the greater the magnitude of the dissonant relationship and ratio of cognitions to proportion of dissonant to consonant elements. And I know that's a mouthful, and that's kind of a whole lot to understand, and we're talking psychology, but this is a very, if you had the time to research this a little bit more, this is kind of fascinating to study this. The cognitive dissonance theory is founded on the assumption that individuals seek consistency between their expectations and their reality. Because of this, people engage in a process called dissonance reduction to bring their cognitions and actions in line with one another. This creation of uniformity allows for a lessening of psychological tension and distress. According to Fessinger, dissonance reduction can be achieved in four ways. In an example case where a person has adopted the attitude that they will no longer eat high-fat foods but eats a high-fat donut, the four methods of reduction are: change behavior of cognition. I will not eat any more of this donut. Justify behavior or cognition by changing the conflicting cognition. I'm allowed to cheat every once in a while. Justify behavior or cognition by adding new cognitions. I'll spend 30 extra minutes at the gym to work this off. And lastly, ignore or deny any information that conflicts with existing beliefs. This donut is not high in fat. Categorizing is used by humans to simplify the world around them. How categorization happens is usually what is the most noticeable or basic categories. Did I read that right? How categorization happens is usually what is the most noticeable or basic categories: race, gender, and age. Once these groups are identified, a set of schema that involve attitudes, stereotypes toward that group comes into mind as well. These attitudes are also involve negative emotional feelings toward those stereotypes, prejudices, or the fixed overgeneralization views held over the labeled group. And you should remember that a couple of weeks ago we talked about stereotypes and we talked about prejudices, so that kind of goes into what we're talking about tonight. And as you know, there's people discriminate and stereotype people of every race, gender, and age. You find a few more interesting things to talk about this topic. So like I said, this is kind of, a lot of this stuff is fascinating, and I don't have 2 hours to talk about this, unfortunately, so we might have to talk about a little bit more of this later. Let me give you this example. You may remember this. You may remember the story of the fox and the grapes. This story was told by Aesop, the fable of the fox and the grapes. In the story, a fox sees some high-hanging grapes and wishes to eat them. When the fox is unable to think of a way to reach them, he decides that the grapes are probably not worth eating, with the justification that the grapes probably are not ripe or that they are sour, hence the common phrase, sour grapes. The moral that accompanies the story is that any fool can despise what he cannot get. This example follows a pattern. One desires something, finds it unattainable, and reduces one's dissonance by criticizing it. This is called adaptive preference formation. So what else we got? There's a few other examples that I want to talk about, right? Just touch on just for a second. There is another, what they call a balance theory, which is, and I think a lot of people do this also. this talks about liking and liking things in people or not liking them. And this is, for example, you may say, I don't like John. John has a dog. I don't like the dog either. Or you might say, I love my child. She drew me this picture. I love this picture. So this is, you know, a lot of this is just psychologically, you know, having to do with the mind and attitude. And the clips I'm going to play are very interesting in that because I remember I played a clip a few weeks ago from I'm having a brain fart right now, but it was believed that racism is a mental disorder because it's kind of hard for me to comprehend hating somebody for no other reason than the color of their skin. You know, that would take a lot of effort. The only time I don't like people is if they actually have done something to me personally, but for me, just to hate people just because they're different than I am, they come in a different color wrapping than me, that's probably is something psychological. And nowadays, you know, there's just all kinds of stuff going on. Like here in Raleigh, we had a couple of incidences a couple of weeks. We had a young black young man was bullied, and he decided he wanted to fight back. So he did, but he ended up getting suspended from school. And I can understand bullying because I was bullied when I was growing up. And a lot of time with bullies, the only thing that stops a bully is that you just have to stop taking it and just turn around and just punch him right dead in the face. I mean, that's just the way it is. Now, some people may condone or not condone, but lots of times that's the only thing they understand. This young man got tired of it after he was called all kinds of names. His family was threatened, and he just couldn't take it anymore. So he fought back. And then we had another incident where we had middle school students, even though they weren't on school property, chatting. Made a little video chatting KKK and telling people to leave the country and all this other kind of stuff. I think they dropped the N-word a couple of times, and they were dealt with, but a lot of people are just amazed that this kind of, I mean, we have incidents like this going on in the country. And a lot of this stuff may be psychological. Because like I said, it's kind of hard for me to understand how someone can hate on somebody and don't even know them. To me, that would take up a whole lot of time and effort and energy just to hate on somebody just because you don't like the way they look. So before I get into the clips, I've got five clips I want to play. But before I get into those, I have a phone call. And according to the number, this looks like somebody I know. So I'm going to answer the phone. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show.
Hey, hello. You pegged it right on.
What's going on?
Hey, you got a good topic going today. And I thought
that's
I would
good.
Call
I,
in to
well, I'm glad
let
you
me know
when
that.
I'm glad you did. When I saw your number pop up, I knew exactly who it was.
Oh, thank you. Hey. your topic and how you explained it, it's like for some it may just go completely over, you know, someone's head, unless you said like research it and stuff, because the clinical description, it's got to be broke down a little bit more for people to understand. I don't know why they do that. Make people sound smarter, I guess, the doctors, I don't know. Anyway, some of the terminology really isn't necessary. Basically, dissonance, you know, it's often strong when we believe something about ourselves and then do something against that belief. So if we believe something like I'm a good person, but I do something bad, and that feeling of discomfort that I did something bad because, you know, I start to feel bad about it, that's cognitive dissonance. Because it's going against what I believe, but I still did it anyway. And depending on, you know, how strong that the dissonance is that you're going against your belief, increases that discomfort and creates more tension, more conflict, and one will beat out the other. But you have to look inward, you know, to see which is the one I want to be. Which person is it? Am I going to let these people influence me this way? Or am I going to go with I know what's right inside? And so, that's the only way to get rid of it. But basically, that's a breakdown of it. You know, your brain is in conflict and it stresses out. And they have to give this whole big explanation about it.
Yeah.
But I think that's more for the psychologist.
Yeah, because I didn't want to get into deep, you know, because the clips I use, the first clip is you know, it uses a pretty basic example because, like I said, this is you know, you start talking psychology, and that type of thing. It is rather deep, and I'm not a psychologist, but I wanted to talk a little bit about it. Like I said, if anybody wants to, you know, go into a little bit deeper, they can. I remember talking about this in college like years ago. But I want to talk about it tonight because, you know, I think, this can relate to some of the things going on now. You know, it's like, you know, you want to be a certain person, but everything going on around you in your environment, you know, might kind of tug you, you may be a person who wants to go, you know, what they call it, a straight and narrow, but then you might get pulled a little to the left and get pulled a little to the right. And so what you got to do, you got to kind of try to bring yourself back into the middle to be the person that you want to be. You know, some people may not have, they may not have a lot of issues with trying to do that, but some people, you know, may be the total opposite. So, you know, and
plus it depends on the importance of it depends on the importance of the subject to that person too, and how they may be manipulated. You know, if there's a core belief that about something specific, you know, that they believe in abortion or don't believe in abortion, and then they're told by the people that they look up to or hang out with or listen to that it's going to be stopped or, you know, something's going to happen to it that affects them directly. So now they're going to go with it, but going along with it, there's still that conflict inside, but if it's strong enough to where they're like, okay, that's it, I'm going with you guys, let's just do this, and they lose all ability to rationalize, and they can't even explain what they're doing next. You know, when they've been told what actually is, they've been given the truth, they've already gone beyond that rationalization. It's no, right. no, this is what I've been told. We got a lot of that going on right now. That's too bad.
It is, because I'm, you know, using the donut situation. I went out and bought a dozen donuts yesterday. I didn't eat them all, but I put a pretty good dent in them. You know, I didn't feel about it at all. Well, you know, they were Krispy Kreme, so, you know, I didn't feel bad about it.
Oh, there you
but
go.
Somebody else, but yeah, well, you know, somebody else may see that, and, you know, if I would have bought them and there's somebody on a diet, you know, and I may have not had thinking that, you know, I bought them and here we go, here's a dozen donuts, and, you know, and this person said, you know, I really shouldn't touch those donuts, but, you know, they look pretty good, so they've got to go through their thing. You know, I didn't have a problem with that. So putting that into what's going on today, is that, you know, we have a lot of this, you know, discussions back and forth about, you know, people not looking the same as everybody else. You know, we want to kick them out, let them stay, you know, and that type of thing. So like I said, this is, you know, a lot of people may be going through this in their head. I'm not, but I mean, that's not to say nobody else is, you know, because like I said, it would. When I was growing up, my mother used to cook liver and onions. And I told her when I turned 18 and moved out, I am never going to eat liver and onions again. And I haven't. She also used to cook cabbage. I can eat cabbage. I was hating on it before. I didn't know why I was hating on it. But now I eat it. It's the same thing as broccoli. You know, it's kind of hard to hate something that you don't know. But until you, you know, in those cases, when I tasted them, these are pretty good. Now I like them. So it's kind of hard to hate some liver and onions. No, I'm not messing with that. You know, I don't care what nobody say. I ain't messing with that. But like I said, it's kind of hard to hate on somebody or something when you don't understand what that something or somebody is about. You know,
right.
It's hard for me to hate people just because they don't look like me when I don't even know them. You know, like I said, it just takes way too much energy to even do something like that.
It's not rational.
You know, right. I mean, you've got to be kind of, I ain't gonna say mental, but you got to be kind of something for, you know. And I know we're taking this to the extreme. Yeah. Because you know, peer pressure is a mother too, because you know, depending on the people that you hang out with, you know, if you're somebody that, you know, that's easily manipulated, you know, somebody can say, well, let's go do this, and then you know it's wrong, but you do it anyway. You know, because not now all of a sudden you're fighting against, you know, I guess you can say good or evil or whatever. But if you're some, the type of person that, you know, if you're, you know, somebody will say, you know, let's go, you know, let's go to the store and steal a candy bar. Okay, you know what's wrong, but you go anyway, you know. You know, if you're that type of person, then you're, you know, you can easily get finagled into anything just because you're not, you know, you're not thinking about what may happen if you get caught or anything like that. You know, there are a lot of people, you know, like that. You know, it just depends on, you know, how your mind is and who the, you know, and what are the things around you that make you do what you do. You know, because,
I think
you know,
our relationship is an example because you don't know me and I don't know you per se, but yet we're willing to accept each other for our opinions. Respect each other. You know, you may not agree with everything I say. I may not agree with everything that you say, but I don't rush to judgment automatically, you know, about who you are because I don't know you.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. It's kind of hard to hate somebody living 2,000 miles away from you when you don't even know them, you know? That's something that, you know, I'm just talking from me, you know, I can sit here right now and say I don't hate anything I hate liver and onions. I don't hate anybody because I just don't, you know, I'm at a point now, it's hard for me to get mad about a lot of stuff. Now I still get mad about things, but you know, that takes an effort to get mad. I can't get mad at somebody when I don't even know them. Now I will be upset if the Tar Heels don't win this tournament, I'm going to be upset. You know, I might pick up a few cars. Well, you know, I might pick up a few cars and throw them a couple of miles. You know, I might get like Hulk mad, but you know, but that's just, you know, I'm just saying.
That's a sports
but,
thing.
You know,
yeah.
Well, yeah, that's a sports thing. Yeah. We're not talking about sports tonight, but it's kind of hard to be mad at people or somebody or something when you don't even know them. That's why, you know, lots of times you have to get to know people before you can, you know, I think one of the biggest things in this country that I don't like is people are so judgmental about other people when they don't even know the people that they're being judgmental about. You know, there's no law written says that all of a sudden that, you know, you can be judgmental about somebody when you don't even, you know, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. You don't even know what the people are going through, but there's so many judgmental people in this country that they just, you know, they just judge, and don't have a clue to what they're talking about.
Exactly.
The one thing I find that is just jacked up now is that, you know, we can't even agree to disagree sometimes. You know, all of a sudden, you know, people calling people names. You know, I don't like this, but you know, I respect your, you know, I respect you because, you know, like I said about us, you know, we may not agree on everything, but that's cool. You know,
it's a good relationship because then I learn about other opinions and you learn about other opinions and, you know, see where people are coming from, have an open mind.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. And plus men can't get along with women anyway, because women do what they want to do. And we can't understand women. So that's why I tell a lot of the young, you know, young men, it's like, you know, don't even try to understand women, folk, because I'm telling you, women do what they want to do. And if you try to,
men were born with logic and women were born with emotions, and women act on emotions. And that's why men can't understand a lot of what women
that's
do,
right.
because it's not
that's
logical.
That's
emotions
right.
sometimes.
That's right. That's why Mr. Spock, you know, every time, you know, that logic, boy, it's, yeah, you're right. You're right. And a lot of stuff going on. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're exactly right. And that's why a lot of stuff now is like people try to understand. It's like, you know, a lot of these things you have to use logic to try to understand what's going on. But lots of times you can't use logic because some things are just beyond using logic about. You know, you can try to talk to somebody, you know, and, you know, this is reality, but they may not. They may be in their own little bubble or own little
emotional world.
Little
yep.
world. Yeah, yeah, and they do what they want to do. They say what they want to say, and you can sit there and try to change their mind all you want to, but you know you may be able to do it, and again you may not be able to do it. It just depends on them, and you know sometimes it's just like forget it. I'm not even you know I'm not wasting my time in it. So just you know you think what you want to think. You can you know do your thing. You know I respect you. You do what you want to do, and just leave it alone at that. You know, we have we know people like that. All you know, we have people in our family like that. I mean, it just but you know, we should be able to do that. But at the same time, we should be able to respect people because they have different ideas, they have different mindsets. They may look different than us, just because they're different than us and don't believe what we believe. You know, that shouldn't that doesn't make them any less of a person. You know, this world would be pretty boring if we all looked alike, if we all thought alike, if we all did the same thing. I mean, this place would be the pits. I mean, because there would be no variety in our lives. There would be no diversity in our lives because everybody's doing the same thing and everybody's thinking the same way, you know, and that just, you know, that would be horrible, you know, because I know people. You know, I'm one way. You know, I like comedy and action movies and stuff like that. And I know other people that don't like comedy, and I know people that don't like action movies. But we're still friends. We still talk about things. We still get. I mean, that's just that's just human nature. So
I mean, our government doesn't do anything to. They think they're trying to make it better, and they're only making it worse. You know, when they give these special. What do you call it? Convictions to people that hurt an LBG person, community person, you know, if they were beat down or if they were killed, and that person is going to get a worse sentence than if they killed somebody else. But that LGBT person's life isn't any more important than anybody else's life. So, you know, if you're going to punish a person, you know, they were dead to rights. I mean, as far as their, you know, you saw them. There's no quibble about they did it or not, then they should be prosecuted the same way, you know, because that life of that person isn't any more important than anybody else's. And when they did that, that's what they said, that their life is more important, so the person is going to be punished harder. And that's wrong.
Yeah. So I'm going to play this first clip, and this is, let's see where my notes, this gives a definition on the subject that we're talking about tonight. This is what is cognitive dissonance. Like I said, this is a fascinating topic, and like I said, you know, we're not going to solve this tonight, but, you know, like I said, if you want to get some research on, you know, do your own research on this, that's fine, but I'm pretty much doing this tonight just to give you know, talk about the subject on this and how it applies to what's going on in the country today. And, you know, maybe we can try to figure out how to deal with it. Maybe not. You know, there's only so much you can do in 2 hours. So I'm going to play this first clip. It's not a very long clip, but I'm going to play it, and then I'll be right back.
So we talked about in a previous video about how attitudes generally shape our behaviors. People strive for consistency and harmony between their attitudes and behaviors. For example, you wouldn't hold the attitude that eating meat is immoral and then still go out to Burger King and have a positive attitude towards eating hamburgers. So there's an inconsistency, and as people, we usually don't like that. We feel a sense of discomfort. Now, when we have these contradictions in our attitudes and behaviors, this can lead to something called cognitive dissonance. So cognitive dissonance is the discomfort experienced when holding two or more conflicting cognitions. And these cognitions can be ideas, beliefs, values, or emotional reactions. And this feeling of discomfort can lead to alterations in one of our attitudes, in one of our beliefs, or even our behaviors. And the reason we alter or change these cognitions is kind of like a protective mechanism or defense mechanism to reduce the discomfort we feel between inconsistencies. So let's take a look of cognitive dissonance in the eyes of a smoker. Now, pretending we're a smoker, we're going to say, "I smoke." But at the same time, we also think and have this attitude that smoking leads to cancer. Now, our behavior is we smoke, but our attitude is that smoking leads to cancer. There is a contradiction there. Do you see it? There's an inconsistency. So this is what dissonance is. They are our contradictions. We don't like contradictions. We like balance and harmony, all that good stuff. So when we have these contradictions, we may do four different things to our cognitions to alter those attitudes in order to reduce that comfort. And the first of these is that we may try to modify one or two of our cognitions. So in this example of the smoker may say, "I really don't smoke that much." So he went or she went from saying, "I smoke," to modifying that a little bit and saying, "I really don't smoke that much." So there's a little bit of an alteration there in order to reduce the discomfort that person has in their attitude and behavior. The second thing that they might try and do is trivialize, which means making less important. So they may change the importance of their cognition or trivialize it by saying something like, "The evidence is weak that smoking causes cancer." So remember, their original cognition was smoking leads to cancer. Now they're saying, by trivializing, that the evidence is weak that smoking causes cancer. So do you see how there's a little bit of an alteration there as well? Now the third way that this contradiction can be modified or reduced is by adding more cognitions. So another way we can make our cognitions less discomfortable, or the contradictions less uncomfortable, is by adding more cognitions. So someone may say, "I exercise so much that it doesn't even matter that I smoke." Well, the first was "I smoke," the second was "smoking leads to cancer," and now we're slightly modifying both of those by adding another cognition saying, "I exercise so much that it doesn't even matter that I smoke." So there's a third way that we deal with cognitive dissonance. And the last way is by denying these cognitions altogether. So we're denying that they're even related, denying that smoking and cancer are even related. So the smoker in this case may say that there is no evidence that smoking and cancer are linked. So this is cognitive dissonance in a nutshell in the eyes of a smoker. And the big take-home message here is that people strive for harmony. We strive for harmony in our thoughts, in our words, in our actions, and as soon as our cognitions, our attitudes and behaviors don't align, that's when we have cognitive dissonance.
Okay, so that gives you just a little basic information on what we're talking about and how this relates to what we're talking about in the country today with race. Because it seems like it's rampant all over the place. There are just people, groups of people that don't like other groups of people for no other reason than, you know, they may look different than them. Their skin color may be different than them. They may worship different than them. They may believe something different than them. And that's pretty much basically it. You know, lots of times people don't want to try to understand other people. They just automatically hate just because, you know, they're not part of their group. And it's really running rampant in this, in the country today, as you well know. And, you know, I don't need to get into a lot of detail with that. But, you know, there is a belief that that black people in this country are feared just because we're black. And, you know, there is no need to fear us. I mean, me, just because I'm of a different color. You know, I'm no better than anybody else. I'm no lesser than anybody else. I can think. I consider myself to be pretty intelligent, even though I'm not like a, you know, I'm not a brainiac or nothing. So there's no reason to fear me other than the fact that I'm black. You know, I don't fear other people because they look different than me. But, you know, there are just some people that are just, they're just stuck on that because that's the way they were brought up. That's the way they, you know, living here in the South, you know, they're generation after generation of people that, you know, that think like that, you know. But we're, you know, with everything going on in this country now, you know, minorities in this country should not be feared because they look different than anybody else. I mean, that's just the bottom line. I mean, we all, you know, we all have the same feelings. We all, you know, we all have different backgrounds. You know, we're all human. But to fear us because we don't look like you or don't think like you or don't do the things you do, you know, it's really banged up, you know. But you have this dissonance, you know, where, you know, I think we can, let me see if I can find that example in here. We could apply it to what was just said about smoker. A lot of these the ones that I found when I was trying to find, you know, just a basic explanation about this, there's a lot of what a smoker example. But we could use race. We could take the smoker, you know, take that example, and instead of using smoking, we can, you know, say use race in that. Well, let's just use this example about this donut. You know, first when I say change behavior or cognition, you can say, okay, for example, you say, I don't like black people. And then justify your behavior, you know, I guess, you know, let's use this as an example. This would be a better example. A couple of weeks ago, I told the story about when I was in college at a part-time job working in a shoe store. I was working with people of every men, women, of every race, color, age, size, whatever. And in particular, there was this one white guy I used to work with. I can't remember his name. So my first day on the job, you know, how you doing? You go to your first day, you know, you get introduced to everybody. How you doing? I'm so-and-so. You know, you go through that rigmarole trying to figure out who everybody is and all that kind of stuff. So I met everybody. Everybody was cool. So for the first few days coming into work, I would say hi to everybody coming in the door like I always do. And like I still do. I come to work, hey, what's up? How you doing? You know, blah, blah, you know, I talk to everybody. So for the first few days, you know, I'm coming into work, hey, how you doing to everybody? And I would say hi to this guy, and he wouldn't say anything to me back. Okay. So I didn't get all bent out of shape about it. So, you know, this would go on and go on. Every day I come to work, hey, how you doing? Hey, how you doing? Everybody, hey, you know, everybody else would speak, but this guy, he wouldn't say two words to me. So I ain't think nothing of it. So as you're, you know, working, you know, you have to talk to people, you know, you had a job, so you have to talk to everybody. So, you know, I would talk to him about something going on in the store or whatever, and he wouldn't hardly say anything to me. But he would talk to the females and he would talk to the other white guys working, but he would not talk to any black guys at all. I mean, he would say two words and that'd be about it. So, you know, this went on for a while. So when I started going to work, I would say hey to everybody else, but I wouldn't say hey to him because I already knew that conversation was gone. It wasn't going to be a conversation. So I just said, forget about it. So I wouldn't say anything to him. So one day I go in there and I'm asking somebody, I'm asking one of the young ladies. I'm like, what's up with this guy? It's like every time I come to work, I try to talk to him. Hey, how you doing or whatever? And he didn't say anything to me. So like, what's his problem? I don't even know this guy. I just met him, so, you know, I couldn't have insulted him because I didn't say two things to him. So what's his problem? But the problem was that he had a girlfriend in high school. I think he might have been a junior or senior. He had a girlfriend. She dumped him and ran off, broke up with him and ran off and got with a brother. So he just took all that anger and hate, and he just applied it to every brother he could see, even the ones he didn't even know. So he was mad at me because I just happened to be a brother. I don't know two things about this guy. I don't even know what the girl looked like. I don't know anything else about him. But he just took his anger out on me and everybody else that looked like me. Like I said, he would talk to everybody else in the store, but he would not talk to me. I mean, we could be in there at night getting ready to lock the place up. You know, there's some certain things you have to do. You know, when you work retail, there are a few things you got to do before you lock up. You got to straighten up. You got, you know, that type of thing. So, you know, we'd have to work some nights, and he wouldn't say anything to me. So it just got to the point where I wouldn't even say anything to him at all. You know, not being mean or anything, but it just gets to the point sometimes that, you know, when you try to be nice to people and they don't want to be nice back to you, you just say, screw it, and you're just going about your business. So he took that anger, placed it on me just because I happened to look like one of the guys or whatever that happened to run off with his girlfriend. So that's psychology, you know, that's psychological, you know, even though I didn't do anything to him, he took his hatred out on me, you know, and we got a lot of that running around now is that, you know, we've got people hating on Muslims and they don't even know what they're hating on them for. You know, we got a lot of this stuff, you know, with black people, and what's the hate about? They just hate people. They just hate us because, you know, color of our skin. We've been going through this for centuries, and we're not going to solve it tonight, but it is good to talk about it. And this may have something to do with this cognitive dissonance, you know, where you try to, you know, you got this hate for something, and then you have to try to justify your hate because it makes you feel better. I've done stories on racism before, and I've also talked about times back in the day that black people used to get lynched, and churches would have flyers and sell tickets, and they would let you bring food to these things, and that's where the term picnic comes from. And they would let you bring food, and they would just make this a great big old gathering, and they're actually killing people. They're hanging people, but they're making it seem like this is some kind of community event. And this went on for years and years. So, you know, that's you're trying to go one way, but you're doing something else, and so you have to try to justify it and try to make yourself feel better from the behaviors that you're exhibiting. This next clip is entitled, What is Cognitive Dissonance? And this is the voices you're hearing there in this clip will be by Dr. Joy, which I've had her clips on here before. She's really good. Dr. Umar Johnson, you know, I've had his clips on here before. And I didn't write his name down, but Dr. James, I forgot his last name. But these are prominent black people. They're doctors. They know what they're talking about. So they're going to be talking about this, and they're going to be applying cognitive dissonance to what we're talking about tonight, to what is going on in the country, you know, as we speak. This clip is a couple years old, but it still relates to what's going on today. So play this, and then I'll be right back.
cognitive dissonance is what occurs when a person is holding on to contradictory ideas simultaneously. Ideas like, we really honor and uphold notions of freedom and democracy.
It's true, you know.
And at the same time that this is being espoused, committing literal genocide against Native people in America and enslaving generations of people of African descent. That would be an example of a conflict that is going on that has to be reconciled internally. As we look at institutions, as we look at how people move through the world in America. In other words, how do you espouse these ideas of freedom and at the same time you are demonstrably doing something opposite of that? And in fact, committing acts that are no less than barbaric as it relates to oppressing people. So, you know, this is the dissonance.
Cognitive dissonance is when you have been conditioned to think, feel, and behave in a certain way. You've been socialized.
I've got the busiest job in the whole world, American housewife.
He gets teeth much whiter, you can see.
Special. For whitening clothes, Blue Cheer is different. So clean, so white.
And all of a sudden, everything you've been taught, everything you believe, has suddenly come face to face with the truth that contradicts it. And this truth is so overwhelmingly powerful that it's hard for you to ignore it. But in confronting this truth, it upsets the internal belief system upon which your life has functioned. It's when you've been raised in a certain religion or a certain political ideology, and someone brings you a morsel of truth that shocks the hell out of your internal intellectual belief system. And the truth they gave you was so powerful that it disrupted and uprooted almost everything you believe. Your ego and your mind automatically begins to try to find a way to shoot down the truth that you just heard. But because your spirit is telling you that this was the truth, your ego and mind is not doing a good enough job to shoot down that new information that is making it hard for you to remain a consistent adherent to that which you were previously told to believe.
So then what does one do to calm the mind of the people whose ancestors perpetrated these atrocities? So you have to somehow normalize the behavior. In other words, make somehow the idea of American chattel slavery for 339 years somehow seem, you know, an okay thing to do. Because imagine 339 years of being told, oh, no, this is okay. The problem is them. The problem is we were benefiting them, or we were helping them, or whatever rationalization they received. So when they get this information now, the jolt is, well, no, that can't be true.
They do not want to accept the reality that processing that information would bring about. And so white folks suffer. Dr. Jeffries is the first one I heard use the term like 30, 40 years ago, that white folks suffer from cognitive dissonance, that white folks have an inability to process information that shows black folks in a positive light, you know, because to process that information in that manner would then show them in the negative light that they have lived out over the centuries in their relationship to us.
Then we have to take a look at what effect then does that have on those who have oppressed. Because again, they have had to live with generations of one denial and acceptance of that dissonance. And the way that they've dealt with that is to one, not just deny it, but hide it. To hide any truth associated with what would cause the conflict. For you to see the barbarism, for you to see the levels and the involvement of people in lynchings and the behavior of large groups of people, generations of people, around mutilating and hanging and beating people. So what you have to do to, one, hide it, and or, two, justify it, produces this kind of callousness that you see, this open defiance in the face of a preponderance of evidence. A preponderance of evidence that says, here it is before us.
White supremacy. When you talk about racism, same thing. White folk haven't been socialized that Africans are inferior all their life. It's part of their internal intellectual belief system. All of a sudden, they come face to face with a black man or woman who's more intelligent than any white person they know or have ever met or have ever read about. Wow. For the first time, I've learned that black people are not inferior, but I've been taught they were. And coming from a culture of white racism and supremacy, I have to rally my psychological resources to come up with an excuse or justification for just how this black person was able to be this intelligent. And to give you an example of how the ego and the mind will combat the cognitive dissonance, for example, it will rationalize the intelligence of the black man. It's when we tell, it's when the white person tell themselves, there's always exceptions to every rule. Yes, he was smart. Yes, he was very intelligent. But that's only because there's exceptions to every rule. Most black folk are not that smart. Most black folk are not that intelligent. You're not likely to come across a lot of them. And so it becomes more easy to tolerate when you come up with a justification, when you come up with a rationale for why you're experiencing information or circumstances that are in direct contradiction to what you've been taught to believe.
So their perspective is, well, you know, this must, you must be not telling the truth, because we're benevolent, we're good, we're kind, which was what had to be fed for generations in order for people to somehow normalize, well, again, what results in being pretty much barbaric and horrific behavior.
In the end, it probably will end up with mixing socially. And you will have, well, I think their aim is mixed marriages and becoming equal with the whites. It's the subject that's talked about all the time. And as far as accepting them socially, if that's what you mean, I could never do that.
In recent times, we're seeing all of the videotape footage of police use of deadly force. The police use of deadly force is not new, but there's a preponderance of evidence that is showing it now, which is producing what? Dissonance. It says, well, this can't be true, even in the face of it. Even watching it, they go, this simply can't be true, because you are now looking at least 300 years of denial that anything wrong has happened, that these people of African descent got anything other than what they deserved. And so now, in the face of the entire globe looking at this and saying, no, this is not okay, and really it's sparking, I would venture to say, some incredible anxiety. And not only anxiety, but a large degree, a large dose of paranoia. For example, in Portland, Oregon, in 2014, right in front of an immigrant refugee organization in Portland, Oregon, there's a group of white people standing with a banner which says, diversity equals white genocide. This is 2014. So I think that those, in terms of epigenetics, we're looking at people who are absolutely losing it. The fear. Because, again, they're not looking at the behavior that has been exhibited towards people of color as being anything other than what, of course, people of color deserve. But now they're beginning to see that not only is that not true, but you're not going to be able to continue to do this without the entire world looking on and holding you accountable for that.
Okay, that was a pretty interesting clip. But yeah, I mean, we see this type of behavior all the time. For example, I'll give you a couple examples, and I got a couple more clips to play for you. But the white young man that raped the unconscious lady behind a dumpster that got probation, when they had his picture, his on TV. They didn't use a mugshot. They used a picture from his from one of the yearbooks, I believe, or something like that. But then it seems like every time a black man gets into something, they use the mugshots. And then sometimes they try to use the mug shots where they make them darker. A good example of that was O.J. When O.J. went through his trial, they used there was a magazine cover, and on the cover, they made him look darker than he usually is. And the reason why they do that is because there's this perception out there that white people should be scared of black people, and they shouldn't be. But, you know, that goes back to how the media operates. You know, they want to use a lot of this stuff to scare white people into thinking that black people are not smart, that we're violent, that we're barbaric, and all that type of deal. And this has been going on for years. And also another example, the police shootings. You know, there's this thing where, you know, if you're big and black, then, you know, then white people should be scared. You know, it's just, that's, you know, that's just the way, you know, this country has come up, you know, for centuries. So, you know, something we're not going to solve tonight, but that's, you know, those are just examples of this, what we're talking about tonight, of this attitude that people have toward black people, even though, you know, this has been going on. You know, they say that, you know, we're not smart, that we're threats, that, you know, and the list goes on and on, but this has been going on for years and years and years. But, you know, we're not threats to anybody. We're just like everybody else. But, you know, but what you have to realize and understand is that, you know, you have to go back to what I talk about all the time is history. I mean, if you keep doing these type of things to people for centuries, I mean, what do you expect? What do you expect to happen? You know, blatant racism. You know, you won't let people have jobs. You know, when they go, you know, want to, you know, disrespect. You want to make people live in places and you know, in towns and whatever, where, you know, you wouldn't treat a dog better. You know, you just wouldn't do that to people. And this has been going on for years and years. So when people, you know, get angry and start talking about it and start rising up, then all of a sudden, whoa, you know. Then all of a sudden, that's when the fear comes in. Matter of fact, they had a congressman pretty much saying that the white race is going to disappear because I think it was Muslims are having babies or whatever, that type of thing. I mean, what kind of mess? Who would say something like that? And then you have people that agree with them. So now you got this going on. Then I read somewhere that, you know, people want a race war. But they don't want a race war between black and white. They want a race war between black and Mexican. You know. Oh, and that sound you hear in the background, if you hear anything, is my grandbaby is upset. And she's not upset about racism. She's upset because she's hungry. I think she's taking care. So I'm going to play this next clip. This is clip number 3. And this talks about unconscious biases. This clip is pretty interesting. I just want you to hear what these people in the clip are saying. But this, like I said, this is called unconscious biases.
You know, right now where we are in the world, we really need to work together. And so we have all kinds of folks trying to work together, trying to work against this battle or win that battle or build this community and break down and dismantle, you know, communities that aren't serving us. But what gets in the way every time is race. There's unconscious bias that's built into our brains because we have really, as human beings, for hundreds and thousands of years, absorbed messages about who belongs at the top of the racial hierarchy and who belongs at the bottom.
I was born in Medford, Oregon, and in Medford there were absolutely no people of color within the city limits. So we're 11 years old, and I meet another person who then becomes my best friend, and she still is my best friend. And her name was Serena Maria Cruz, right? So Serena for me, wasn't of color. She was white. So we're graduating, we're signing up for the PSAT to take the test, and this is where we've gone to school together for 5 or 6 years, and we've been to each other's houses, we've had birthday parties, we're all involved in the same gifted program activities, and she's filling out her form and filling out her race, and I'm filling out my form, and I look over at Serena, and I see her filling out the bubble for Hispanic. And so I actually reach out and I grab her hand and I pull it up and I tell her, Serena, you're supposed to fill out the white bubble. And she looks at me and she says, look at me, Susie. She says, look at me, like this. And I looked at her and I didn't have any clue what she was talking about. I didn't know what she was talking about. And when I look back now, right, and I think about entitlement. I mean, it's hard for me to even locate where racial entitlement is because everything about my life has been entitlement.
When I use the term codes of power, I'm foremost talking about the reality that culture informs everything that we do, and that most white people, because we live in a country where we see ourselves everywhere in every way, and our culture is validated everywhere and in every way, we don't understand how our cultural values are brought into the classroom. So when a white boy walks in the room, we understand him. We have similar cultural values. We understand how to behave, how to talk, how to respond to one another. If I'm a white woman and he's a white boy, he can see me as his mother. I can see him as my child. That positions him to know not only that he's right in the world, but that he deserves to feel comfortable and that he is really claiming his rightful place in the world to be a leader. White boy who walks in the room and is animated and moving around and maybe even a little cheeky is smart. And isn't he smart? Isn't he cheeky? He's almost looked at as, well, boys will be boys. A boy of color, especially an African American boy who walks in the room exhibiting the same behavior, walks in and says, I might need to keep an eye on him. And that, I really believe, is our internalized racism, that we are afraid of these young boys. And I'm talking young boys, 4 years old and above. And that instead of the teacher looking at him or herself and saying, what is going on with me, that this same behavior creates fear in me instead of admiration, we pathologize the boy of color.
I travel all the time. If I'm in an airport, I've seen folks, particularly who could be perceived as being from the so-called Middle East, who could be perceived as potentially Arab or whatnot, or Persian or anything else, how many times I've seen them pulled aside and searched, and it's not that fascinates me so much. It's the reaction of the other travelers that I'm looking for, right? It's the reaction of folks looking at them sort of very nervously, as opposed to when I'm stopped, because I travel enough, occasionally I'm going to get searched. Statistically, that's obviously going to happen. And when I am, what's that experience like? And I pay very close attention, and no one's looking at me. No one is looking at me with that look of, oh, crap, I really hope that white dude is not on my plane, right? Nobody's really nervous about that.
When I think of internalized racism, I think of the appropriation by persons of color of the prejudice, bigotry, and stereotypes which are aimed at them.
It's always kind of like climbing up this mountain. Well, maybe if I do this, maybe if I do that. And sometimes not even consciously saying, well, maybe if I do this. It's not like I would consciously say, well, maybe if I just made my hair a little straighter, I would be more accepted.
You start learning, oh, well, you know, if I could be more white, you know, then I could be more comfortable, then I can fit in better. There would be people that would come into the flower shop where my mom worked. I would work in there sometimes during high school. And if there was someone that walked in that was, say, Latino, you know, I might help them last, just like the white people do.
I think it's really, as Americans, we still are really not good at seeing a racist impact when there is no apparent racist. We need to really broaden our view so that we can see that if you have had decades, centuries of explicit racism, and then on top of that, you lay seemingly race-neutral rules and policies, you're going to get still a churning out of racial disparities, again, even if no one intended to do that, because that's the way structural racism works. It, history matters.
Okay. And just a few more things on that, and then I'll play this very last clip. But, yeah, I mean, this is just, you know, racism in this country, you know, decades, ever since day one. And, you know, people may get upset because, you know, I'm talking about it tonight or other people talk about it, but we need to talk about it. We're not just going to just let this stuff just get slipped, just get pushed under the rug, because that's what a lot of people wants us to do. You know, it's kind of jacked up that some people want black people to quit talking about racism, but then there's a group of people that every year, you know, they keep bringing up the Civil War. They keep having these reenactments of Civil War battles. You know, they fly the flags around. They do all this, they do all that, but they don't want people to forget about that. They don't want people to, Jewish people, they don't want them to, you know, forget about the Holocaust. But every time black people talk about racism, then all of a sudden we need to quit talking about it. You know, we get the looks, you know, we get the comments, you know, you people need to quit talking about it. And then we also get the things, comments on social media that if we don't agree with what other people are saying, then we should leave the country. Well, I'm going to just say it like this. Thing is, make me leave. You know, if you're so upset about what I say or what I write on social media and you want me to leave, well, come and make me leave. You know, if you think you're that big and bad, you know, come help me move out. Give me a plane ticket wherever you want me to go and make me leave this country. I'm not. And I'm going to keep talking about this stuff. And other people, and I'll, you know, tell other people, you know, keep talking about this stuff. You know, we're not going to stop talking about it because it makes you uncomfortable. And I think that's a lot of this stuff. It's comfort because, you know, you have to remember slavery went on for centuries, and it was justified by using religion lots of times. You know, the Bible says this, blah, 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 and then they would apply it to make them feel better, you know, even though they were treating other human beings like crap. So they had to justify it to make them feel better. And, you know, and we see this to this day. People treat other people how they want to treat them, and then they want to do something where they have this belief system that it makes them feel better if they just ignore the reality of what's going on and they just do their thing and they pretend that their thing is the right thing. And they don't care about anybody else or anything else. And a lot of this is attitude also. You know, I call it a stank attitude. You know, you just think you can just say things to people, you know, treat people any kind of way and think that it's okay. But then in your head, you have to justify the way you're treating other people. And it's just getting to the point now that a lot of people are not going for it. You know, people not, you know, People are not down with that. So that's where you get a lot of pushback. Very last clip I'm going to play, Dr. Joy again. One of her fascinating clips where she talks about white racism and the so-called myth about black racism. I think a lot of times whenever you talk about racism, all of a sudden it gets flipped around, it gets reversed. And they're saying that, you know, black people are racist. Well, I've done reading on this, and you've probably done reading and heard about this, that black people can't be racist because black people don't have the power that white people have, because in this country, It's been determined for years that if you're white, you're in the you're in the majority. But if you're black or anything not white, then you're in the minority. The difference is, you know, in South Africa, there was the blacks were the majority, the whites were the minority, but they practice apartheid. That's not been practiced here because it's just the opposite. But if you're not in the majority, then you usually have power just because of the color of your skin. And if you're not white, then you don't have that power. So in this clip, this is a very, if you have not heard this clip, this is a very fascinating clip where she explains that there's I'm not going to say it's simple, but black people cannot be racist because we don't have the power that white people have. But I'm going to quit talking. I'm going to let her explain because she explained this a whole lot better than I do. Be right back.
How many people think they understand what racism is? Show of hands. Come on. You know, you think you know. I'm not suggesting I know. I just have a couple of definitions that that kind of came to me as I thought about it. How many people think there are white racists? That there are white racists out there? How many think there are black racists out there? Okay. Now, this is an interesting thing because this becomes important as we begin to define concepts. Now, I do that. I usually define concepts all the way. But one of the things that I do is I try to help people get a picture of what I mean by racism. So tell me how it is. I'm going to first category is white racism, then we'll deal with black racism. So white racism. Tell me the ways in which white racism adversely impacts the lives of black people. Just what are the ways that white racism can adversely impact the lives of black people as a group? What are some of those ways? I'm sorry? Power, but how is that defined specifically? Education, okay. I'm sorry? Economically, employment. What else? Housing, what else? Policing, why are we here today? Healthcare, okay. Now, we could actually kind of grow that list. Now we're going to move over to black racism. Tell me the ways in which black racism adversely impacts the lives of white people as an entire group. Thank you. The reason why you become silent, there's one that always comes up, and that's fear. White people are afraid of black people. They are afraid of us. And it's a very interesting thing because black people know it. We know white people are afraid. But you have to start getting into the psychology. What are you afraid of? Why are you afraid? But it's an interesting dynamic. Now, also you see the difference in what racism is, do you not? Racism implies you have not just prejudice, but the power to do something with that prejudice. Now, I don't like you, not only that, but I'm going to control whether you can get, you know, I may say I hate you. I hate white people. I hate them. It's not going to change you getting that, you know, loan when you go to the bank. You could go, I can hate you all the way to the bank. Not going to change. Do you see the difference? That whereas white racism says, not only do I not like you, but I'm going to change the impact of where you can live. I'm going to determine with that racism where your powers are. You following me? And I'm talking about as a group, not an individual, because people said, I remember when my uncle didn't. I'm not talking about your uncle. I'm talking about the whole group. I'm not talking about an incident. That's a difference. But white people are afraid. So let's get into how this fear impacts criminal justice. Because if white people in this room are afraid of black people, guess who else is afraid of black people? Only they have guns. So, now let's look at what he said. Simply put, white cops are afraid of black men. We don't talk about it. We pretend it doesn't exist. We claim color blindness. We say white officers treat black men the same way they treat white men, but that's a lie. And here's a big one. In fact, the bigger, the darker the black man, the greater the fear. Any big black men in here? You got a big old bullseye on you, even if you got the suit on. And it's the truth, because statistics bear it out. The African community knows this. Hell, most whites know it. Yet even though it's essential, if not the defining ingredient in the makeup of police racism, white cops won't admit it to themselves or to others. He goes on to talk about actually learning it in the academy. Norm Stamper, he told on everybody. He had folks indicted. He now lives in a cabin on a mountain somewhere in the San Juan Islands. That's where he lives. Nobody knows where he lives because he knows they're coming after him, and they have. This is a statement from the book also. Race and class discrimination are all too real in every phase of the criminal justice system, from arrest to sentencing. Impoverished black defendants, and this is going to sound familiar to you, are far more likely to wind up on death row than richer middle-class whites, or the 3,000, and of the 3,700 inmates now awaiting execution nationwide, 43% are African-American. Black defendants are not accorded the same due process rights as whites. Their cases are not given the same scrutiny and consideration afforded to white defendants. Not now, not ever, not in this country. This is what the man said. It was dismal. But he doesn't believe it's possible in the current system. So what we have to realize is we need to be realistic about that. So what I have to do is teach my sons how to navigate this, do I not? Doesn't matter what I think, and no, baby, you know, we are the world. No, this is real. You do have a bullseye on you. When you're in the elevator with the only white woman there, and you're the big black man, she's clutching her purse and she's worried. That's the reality. And if you startle her too much, it used to mean you get lynched. Matter of fact, I think she could scream rape now and you'd get taken down.
So that was a pretty powerful clip from Dr. Joy. So I want to include that also in this conversation. In a few minutes, I'm going to go ahead and close this episode up. Put a little nice bow tie on it, a little nice bow on it. But I will say this before I go. And I say this to everybody listening to the show. Doesn't matter what color you are. Doesn't matter male or female. Doesn't matter what school you went to. Doesn't matter any of that. The only thing that matters is that we are all people. And we all need to get along. Doesn't matter if, you know, the color wrapping that you came in. Doesn't matter what your hair looks like. Doesn't matter what the color of your eyes looks like. It doesn't matter. We are all people. We all need to get along because this is the only planet that we have. This is the only country that we have. And it doesn't make a whole lot of sense trying to kill each other because we just don't like the way somebody looks, how somebody acts, or the religion of somebody, or, you know, something really, really stupid. It does not matter. My thing is I'm pretty much... I'm a pretty laid-back kind of guy, and I pretty much go by what Dr. King says. I like to get to know people, judge people on the character, not on what they look like, you know. And I would hope other people view me in the same way. You know, I'm not going to judge somebody just because they look different than me, or that they're that they're female, or that they graduated high school or they didn't graduate high school, you know. I hope to think that I'm not a judgmental person. I'm not perfect or anything. But it takes a whole lot of effort to hate somebody when you don't even know who they are. You know, it's kind of hard for somebody to judge me, me having walked a mile in my shoes. Here's my shoes right here. If you think you know me, please feel free to come take these size 9s and, you know, and walk a mile in these things. I think this is something important to talk about. You know, this is cognitive. I mean, what is this about? This is a very complicated issue. I mean, subject or whatever you want to call it. You know, and the time that we talked about it tonight, we didn't, you know, my thing wasn't trying to solve the racism problem in this country. What I wanted to do, just shine a different light on it and just to talk about, you know, what this thing is about, what's going on. So, like I said, you know, if you're listening to this, wherever you're listening to this at, because this show goes all over the world,
and we get the stats on this. So, you know, no matter where you are, no matter what country you live in, just remember, you know, a lot of this, the mess that we go through in this world, just because we just don't understand, we just don't want to understand and get to know people. You know, it's real easy to you know, find a group of people that look like you. You know, it's real tough to, you know, try to find out what other people like if they, you know, if they look different than you. But that's the cool thing about it. You know, I have friends that come in all colors and shapes and size. I mean, my family is the same way. You know, my family is mixed with everybody, everything. And the thing is, they're my family. I don't care what they look like. They're my family. You know, I have white people in my family. I have Native American people in my family. I have black people. I mean, I got the whole rainbow. I have straight people in my family. I have gay people in my family. I've got all kinds of people in my family. But the important thing is they're my family. And I don't look at them any different than anybody else. And that's just the way I was raised. You know, I don't judge people on what they look like. I judge people on how they act, and especially how they act toward me. So if you're a person that, you know, you don't like me for whatever reason, then I don't like you, and I won't mess with you. I'll leave you alone and go about my business. But, you know, if you want to get to know me, you know, that's cool too. Come find me. Talk to me. You know, you may find out, you know, and this goes for everybody. You know, you may find out that they like the same things you like. You know, they may like the same food you like. Or they may like the same shows that you like or whatever. Listen to the same music or whatever. But you will never know what that person is like until you take that step and go find out what that person's about. Instead of judging people by what they look like. Right now, you got a group of people judging, you know, people of a different religion just because they practice that religion. That's not right. That's not right. They're people just like you are. But that is not right. So until we solve, you know, this country, this planet has a lot of issues, and until we solve these issues, you know, we need to just learn how to talk to each other and get along with each other. Like I said, this hour and 30 minutes might not change a whole lot, but hopefully somebody's listeners will get the idea to just, you know, put all of that other nonsense aside and just go out and talk to people. You know, just get to learn, you know, what makes people tick, you know. And I'm sure that will solve a whole lot of the issues that we have going on in this world. So I'm going to bring the show to a close because I have a long day tomorrow, like most of you. And plus this time changes. It'll be months before I get used to this mess. It's hard on me. Now losing, I mean, not gaining an hour, not too bad. But when you lose an hour, it's pretty tough. So hopefully you got something out of the show tonight. Thank you for listening. You can always go back in the archives and listen to the show whenever you feel like it. I want to thank my phone caller, Suzette. You know, she you know, and the conversation that we had is a really good example about what I'm talking about. Even though we don't agree on everything, at least we show each other the respect. We respect each other's opinions, and we still get along. And I still enjoy it when she calls, even though we don't agree on some things, but we do agree. We agree on more things than we disagree on things. And I always enjoy when she calls, so I just want to tell her, give her a shout-out. Thank you for calling, and I want to thank everybody for listening. I'll be back next Tuesday night from 8 until 10-ish on the subject for next week, which I haven't come up with. I'm still trying to tweak a few things. We're going to have another very interesting lesson in black history, black culture, black current events, and all that good stuff. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it. I'll see you next week. Peace out.